Can it be the real three?
Jan Tomaszewski, who was a Polish diplomat, but had no diplomatic position in Portugal at this time, was sent out about two or three days after I arrived in Lisbon by the Polish Bureau in London, responsible for the rescue and reassembling of all the Polish soldiers who had been scattered after the fall of France. Like most educated Poles, he was a wonderful linguist. He also had the advantage of having a Portuguese mother, so he was rarely fluent in Portuguese. And he was further helped by the fact that the Portuguese authorities could never understand Polish names correctly. And he got onto the police records not as Tomaszewski, but as Muzyka. And this, I'm sure, prolonged his mission for some considerable time, though there came a moment when they were after him, and I had to get him onto a British flying boat, and he just got away one jump ahead of the police.
Why were they after him?
He was, of course, constantly committing offences under Portuguese law by bringing illegally into Portugal Polish soldiers who had no passport or papers.
So were you helping with this work? Is that what you mean by liaison with the Poles?
I helped him, yes. That I should add, the Polish system was extremely complicated. There were at least five secret Polish services operating in Portugal. And I had to help all of them whenever I thought it practical and not inconsistent with my own security. On one or two occasions, I think I helped them with money. But what they most needed, apart from money, was communication. And I put one or more of Tomaszewski's men in touch with the British naval attaché Madrid, Captain Hilgarth, Hillgarth, who was, I think, independently helping Poles, but the Poles knew that if they knocked on the right door in Madrid, Lisbon or Gibraltar, they would get help from the British. I remember vividly towards the end of my time in Lisbon, i.e. probably in the first half of 1942, and the Polish service attachés in Lisbon gave a dinner party out at Estoril to all the British service attachés who had helped them. I think I had probably had a wider authority and indeed order to help Poles than my official colleagues, such as the official military, naval and air attaché. But I shall always remember that party because I think we all had a bottle of gin and a bottle of Portuguese vodka per head before the party really began. And it's the only time in my life that I woke up in bed 20 miles away, and to this day I don't know how I got there. But this, of course, is typical Polish. But the Poles went on drinking all night, and they just went back to their embassy the following morning without troubling to go to bed.
So this particular business of liaison with the Poles was something you were instructed to do from Baker Street, was it?
Yes.
You said that you generated some other objectives yourself. What were those?
This is not relating to the Poles only, but other objectives for me in Lisbon.
Yes.
What was I thinking of? The whole the whole operation of organizing resistance in any country postulates having one or more resistance leaders. I decided quite soon that the Portuguese, out of sheer affection and loyalty, were so indiscreet that if a Portuguese were asked by somebody he knew to be a kind of British official, whether clandestine or otherwise, they would beat their chests and tell everybody about it. Therefore, I decided I would never have any discussions with any Portuguese on the subject of resisting a possible enemy invasion, partly for this security reason, partly because my Portuguese language was so bad. And so I looked for and found two or three regional organizers. In the north, I found the senior shell man, who of course was British, and was very keen to do something, and I regret to say was eventually expelled for what he did. In the south, I got a British executive in a mining group who was obviously intelligent, had been in the country for years, knew the whole southern part of the country very well, and he was very keen to contribute to the war effort in that way. In Lisbon, I selected and briefed a Frenchman, which was not a good choice, though there were arguments for it. He was the free French representative in the British Embassy. I mean, he had an office in the British Embassy. He was almost part of the military attaché's team. He'd lived most of his life in Portugal. He was a Freemason, which is always regarded as an extremely suspicious affair in a totalitarian state such as Portugal was. And I think he had various political ambitions. He was certainly anti-Salazar. And I would have been wise to have found somebody else. The concept of not having any Portuguese who'd ever met Major Beaver, who had any official position in my clandestine organization, was absolutely sound. But it was a mistake, I think, on the whole, to take on that particular Frenchman, who was as clever as he could be and knew everything that went on in Lisbon. I don't think he had diplomatic immunity, although he was working in the embassy, British Embassy. But it was a great advantage to have somebody whom I could see any day of the week, any time of day, without ever going outside the British Embassy. One may say this surely was all part and parcel of the number one objective of organizing resistance in Portugal. Yes, it is true, and I can't say there's anything particularly original about it, but this was, I'm describing rather the method of implementing the directive that I had, rather than describing another element in it. Of course, the liaison and help to allies proved to be far bigger field of action when I arrived in Lisbon than I could have conceived when I was being briefed in London. And I discovered a Belgian who subsequently became a great friend and later became the Procureur General in he was the chief magistrate in Belgium, and was made a vicomte for his pains. Splendid, intelligent man. He was the Belgian intelligence representative in Portugal, and he was disguised under the title of conseiller juridique. And so I, being a lawyer, and he being a lawyer, found it easier to communicate and so on. The first time I met him, something which he's never forgotten in the last 50 years, I gave a very large sum of money, which I'd been told by London to make available to him. And because they were, of course, financing the Belgian resistance movements. And the above all, the lines of communication, the so-called underground railways, which everybody had, every ally had his own lines of communication to help people get out of whether they were starting in Warsaw or Brussels or Amsterdam, and they had to have lines of communication, safe houses where they could stop off, and all this required money. And that, of course, meant local currency. And the man I mentioned, who'd been a signaler and spoke good Brazilian, he was in peacetime a banker in what was then the Bank of London, South America, and he was invaluable to me. Because he could go to the local bank manager and say what currencies he wanted and discuss it as banker to banker.
Coming back to your attempt to get regional organizers, did you expect that these regional organizers would recruit people to a resistance movement?
Yes.
And did they actually do that?
No, because we never got to the point of my giving them instructions really to do anything except to be ready. I think they had instructions without going into any details to select rather than recruit anybody in their part of the country, anybody, let us say, within 10 miles of a certain city, whom they would regard as reliable in the event of a German invasion. But I never distributed either money or arms or explosives to anybody in Portugal.